First Baptist Church of Redmond, August 12th, 2018. No, Jesus was betrayed with a kiss.
Please rise. Then Jesus
said to the chief priests, captains of the temple, and the elders who had come to him, "Have you come out as against a robber with swords and clubs? When I was with you daily in the temple, you did not try to seize me, but this is your hour and the power of darkness."
Thank you very much. No, Jesus was betrayed with a kiss. Title of today's message. A little bit of Greek up here. We're going to talk just a little bit about a history to see how people change. Things change. This is an old document from the 5th century BC, and the Greek name on the very top line is Themistocles. Themistocles? Who's Themistocles? I heard about that in world history. Yes, you did. If you look at your world history, the Persians and the Greeks were at loggerheads with each other. Sometimes the Persians would come over and be victorious. But if you have an outsider, an outside enemy force that comes in to attack and invade, you want to get rid of them. You want to destroy them. Themistocles was a leader in the Greek states, and his idea was to defeat these Persians, because the land was connected, but the Persians were a great naval power. They had a lot of boats. So he was trying to convince his fellow Greek leaders to get their people to vote, because it was a pure democracy. Everybody dropped their votes in to build ships, not just any ship, triremes. Triremes were designed, actually we had that name because there were three levels of rowers. And even with the big ship, they're not going to row that fast, only 5, 6, 7 knots in equivalent speed. That'd be even fast for a trireme. But the point of that trireme is, why were they all rowing? Why were they rowing so hard? There weren't a lot of weapons on those ships. The nose of that ship had a, at this time it was bronze, Bronze Age, bronze enforced tip. And so these ships were designed to ram other ships, hit them broadside, knock a big hole in, and then with three rows of guys, they were hopefully going to get enough emphasis to pull their ship free and then go out and do that again to somebody else. Now, the problem was, like any other people, who votes for taxes, unless you live in Washington State? Washington State, we like to vote for taxes. The Greeks did not like to vote for taxes. And so Themistocles was a good politician because he was manipulative. So he was somewhat deceptive as far as when his plan wasn't accepted, he couched it in a different way, as if this money he was asking for was for a different purpose. I will tell you again, Themistocles was a politician. And so he got his money, and he secretly ordered 200 triremes to be built. Now, in those days, that's a lot of effort, a lot of money, and a lot of time. Fortunately, later on, when the Persians did strike, Themistocles stepped up and said, "Oh, by the way, we shouldn't worry too much about these Greeks. Right around the corner in another dock, why, we have 200 triremes waiting for them." And then the ships show up. The Greeks are victorious over the Persians in that battle. And hooray, Themistocles is a hero. But do you remember how popular Winston Churchill was during World War II in the United Kingdom? Well, during he had some, but afterwards, tell me what happened when the first election came up after World War II. What happened to Winston Churchill? He lost. He did not win re-election. The Greeks would have a means of voting. Sometimes it was white rock yes, black rock no. But sometimes they had these little tokens. And these were tokens that were used for an election that was taking place. One person will be cast out of government. Write, you know, take a pen, because this is a dark ink on a clay vessel. Write on your chip, who you want to be cast out of government. And Themistocles' name was on the majority of the chits, and so he was cast out of government. Now remember I said Themistocles was a what? Politician. Well, people learn how to be politicians. And the reason why this collection up here, this thing up here you see is kind of famous, is because people have got a hold of things. Just like we sometimes save ballot records, they save some ballot records. And if you looked at the majority of these chits that have the name Themistocles written on them, people have studied them and noticed that the handwriting on these chits is almost exactly the same. So somebody wanted to get Themistocles out of government because he was too effective at getting his own way, even if it was for the quote-unquote good of the people. So somebody sat down and wrote out thousands of these little chits ahead of time, and when the election came, the question is, did they distribute it to people, or did they just go up to the ballot boxes, dump them in, and say, my precinct has voted? So here's a guy who saved his country, saved his collection of city-states, and just like Churchill, as soon as things cleared up, he's out of office. We're going to look at some of the details of Jesus' arrest in the garden, verses 47 through 53 from Luke chapter 22. We're going to put some things together because Luke is writing for the purpose of telling us what Jesus was like. What facts do we need to know? And some of the places he summarizes, even those 24 chapters he's going to summarize, he is going to summarize this event, 47 through 53. So we're going to look at some of the other Gospels to throw some details in so we can see what was happening. If you can remember from last time, they'd eaten their Passover because it was the 14th of Nisan, the night that they were going to do that. Jesus had told Judas to go ahead and go do his business because he knew what was happening. Jesus and the other 11 had walked out, and it seems that during that week, they weren't staying with somebody. They weren't going back to Bethany. They apparently were going out, and as their custom was, going to this open area, this field near Gethsemane on the side of the Mount of Olives, and they seemed to have been sleeping outside there. That was not uncommon. Remember, it was a big festival. Thousands of people had come. Jesus and his group was not the only one sleeping outside. They apparently, just as they had arrangement and permission to use the upper room, they probably had arrangement and permission to use the Garden of Gethsemane. Jesus had gone out with his disciples. 8 of them stayed at the gate. Only 3 of them came in with Jesus. Last time we had looked at Jesus stopping, kneeling, and praying and submitting himself to whatever his Father's wish. Remember, that's the idea of whatever his Father's wish was for these details. God, I'm willing. After that, Jesus had no qualms about stepping forward and going through the Father's plan for him, even though it was going to costly, painful, and uncomfortable. Because remember, Jesus was human as well as he was divine. And I don't even like to get shots all the time. But Jesus was going to go through a very terrible experience. So while Jesus, notice, while Jesus was still speaking, he was speaking closely, intimately to the 3 that were with him. Behold, a multitude, or all of a sudden, hey, where'd all these people come from? Jesus is speaking, it's nighttime, it's quiet. Behold, a multitude. So much had led up to this moment. Because you just don't show up with a couple hundred people during a Jewish holy day in this type of environment unless you've got a plan. Remember, it's been probably, we think 2 days before this. We think 2 days before this, Judas had volunteered himself to the Jewish leadership, the Sanhedrin, and said, I can deliver Jesus into your hands. What's it worth? And they made the deal, made the price, and paid him immediately because, A, this is too good to be true. They were trying to plan how to do it. One of Jesus' own people is going to give him up. And if we pay him, there's an obligation. There's also a legal obligation. We could have him arrested if he doesn't do it. So they paid him on the spot. And now it's time. John 18:28 says, knowing that this was going to happen that night, that the Jewish leaders were so busy that they had not yet eat their Passover meal. John 18:28, they're taking Jesus from trial to trial, and they did not want to go into the Roman headquarters because it was Gentile, a.k.a. it's unclean. They didn't want to be defiled lest they may eat the Passover. They still hadn't eaten the Passover by the time they had taken Jesus for his trial to begin. So they were very, very busy people. Having made Judas their insider was such a convenient thing for them. But I want you to notice the overkill and show of force that they went through. There had to be, I agree with people who write, this was not a small crowd. Because notice what Luke had said. Behold, a multitude, there's a crowd suddenly out of nowhere. At least 200 people, I believe, showed up for this event. At least 200 people. Why do we pick that number? If you look at this number, there would have been Roman soldiers, that's what we're talking about first. There would have been Jewish temple police. There would have been representatives from the groups of the Sanhedrin, representatives of the high priest. There would have been Judas and the small group of people going with him who were prepared to point out, because they had made the deal on the sign, how will you know it's him? I'm going to kiss him. So the majority of this group was a subsection of the Roman cohort that was stationed in the Antonia, which would have been right next to the temple grounds. Why is that? That's interesting. Why did our Jewish friends decide that just their own temple police weren't enough? Just bringing their religious representatives wasn't enough. Why did they have to bring the Romans? After coming in, Jesus is going to speak, and we'll talk about this again later, 22:52, speaks of them carrying swords and clubs. Can't make a lot of detailed distinction, terminologies, kind of, but very likely the Romans were the ones packing the swords, because Roman soldiers would have had that 18-inch gladius that they would have carried, and the temple police were the ones who would have had a stick with a very large, round, generally wood, not necessarily spiked, but just if you had a wood sledgehammer, because that's what they carried. So those two types of implements were brought to arrest Jesus. Why have the Romans? Interestingly enough, the temple police had failed to do what they were told before, John chapter 7, because they were sent out in John 7's record to arrest Jesus and bring him in for questioning and perhaps even trial then, because the authorities wanted to shut him down. They'd already been effective with the baptizer on the other side, and so why don't we try this with Jesus? Let's just go pick him up. So as interesting enough, as the temple police walked out to arrest Jesus, they first mingled in with the crowd. Now, there would have been obvious they had a distinctive dress, and they probably would have had their wooden mallets with them as well. But as they listened to Jesus speak, as a group, they became convinced that he was not some ordinary thief, not some ordinary robber. John 7:45-46, as it says up there, they came back, "Why didn't you arrest him? Where is he?" And they said, "No one ever spoke like this man." So they had a conscience. And that's not to say the Roman soldiers didn't have a conscience, but the Roman soldiers, they had a garrison commander, a chiliarch. They had someone who would have given them orders that they expected to carry out. Our temple police, when they had their chance to arrest Jesus, they'd failed at least once, perhaps even a second time. They couldn't be trusted. They might come under Jesus' influence. Amen? So even some of the enemies had a tendency to listen to Jesus. So they show up. Jesus said to him, "Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss?" Remember, it's Passover. That means full moon. Would have been very bright. It wouldn't have been the rainy season for them yet, so it would have been a clear night. Probably had been a nice, warm spring day. No message in our text anywhere of any kind of precipitation or problems. So on this clear sky, full moon, probably a starry night, this act takes place. Luke records basic facts. We're going to go to some other Gospels to get some details. What's easy to miss is that when Judas came up to Jesus, he didn't just smack him once on the cheek and back off. Some people will write that if you had a famous rabbi that you followed, that you would show your dedication to the rabbi by, and you've seen the movies. This actually happened to me. This happens to me in Romania, no place else, guys have come up to me, glad to see you, and they hands on the shoulder, or they give you a hug and kiss you on both cheeks. I'm an American, so that feels funny, especially when the guy hasn't shaved for a couple of days because he's from the local village. But this guy comes up and that's just a greeting, and that's just the way it is. Apparently in these days, if you were going to go greet your rabbi in the square to show your dedication and respect, you would grab him, come up to him, and you would kiss him more than once, generally cheeks, side to side. You might kiss him once on the lips to show your dedication, but it's just a cultural thing. It's what they did. Matthew and Mark use the more descriptive, intensive term to clearly make it shown that when Judas went up to Jesus, there was no doubt what he was doing. They didn't say, what did he do? Did he peck him on the cheek? Did he just hug him? What's going on? Judas kissed Jesus more than once. It was obvious. Why? This is the guy. Because a lot of these people might not have seen, the Roman guys, they weren't hanging around looking for Jesus. The temple police, some of them had seen Jesus, but the Roman guys, they were the muscle. Who are we going to get? So this clearly would show this is the man. When those around him, so we're talking about now, probably by this time the other 8 disciples had walked up from the gate because they knew something was up. They walked up and they said to Jesus, look, shall we strike with the sword? Because remember, Jesus had said, in the past you've heard me to send you out as groups of 2. Did you have any problems? No. Things are different now. I'm going to be gone. I'm not going to be your personal protector. I'm not going to be the one who's going to get the lightning bolt of stress. I'm not going to be the one who's going to deflect criticism of you. Now you are going to be sources of attack and rest. So it's good for you to have something defensive with you. He said, sell your large outer garment that you might sleep in or roll up and sleep under. And sell that and get some kind of a thing to defend yourself with. Get yourself a sword. And the disciples, that had stuck in their minds because this was a change. Because before they'd been with Jesus, kept them safe, kept them protected. Jesus had been the one who had to walk through the crowd. Jesus had been the one who had separated people. Jesus had been the one who had been the one speaking out loud and defending them. And now Jesus is saying, I'm going to be gone. You need to be ready for the day when you need to take care of yourselves. And, you don't tell a bunch of guys you're going to have to take care of yourself and that not sink in a little bit. They had some ego. They had some oomph about them. They were fishermen. They were hardworking guys. And so, Master said we have to be ready. Maybe this is the time. And Jesus had told them, no, don't worry about that. This isn't going to happen until later. But they clearly saw what was happening. And misunderstanding Jesus' words about the future, how they're going to protect themselves when he's gone, they offered to act, but it was at the wrong time. All 4 Gospels mention this event. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. Only John's Gospel, chapter 18, verse 10, mentions the 2 individuals that immediately come into conflict. John 18, 10. Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. John was very likely the last Gospel written. Peter had likely died by the time John wrote his gospel. Perhaps the reason why John feels comfortable to put all these names in is, just like today, if you put anything on the internet, everybody's going to know it, right? If you put something on Twitter, people can know and you can, well, that's libel, slander, what's going on? At least Peter was dead. It was okay to mention his name, because including that name in the story would not cause there to be a reason to give grief to Peter to have him arrested. Because the disciples, as Jesus had commented, were now under scrutiny, they're under study. And if the other ones had very quickly said, It was Peter who did this. Somebody said, see, they've admitted it's him. I don't know if that's right, but I think that's just as good a reason as any, is that at least Peter's gone now. It's okay. It's safe to mention the names. Peter, the assailant, may have felt bold to act because remember what the other Gospels put in? Luke leaves some things out. At first, Judas had kissed Jesus. Judas stepped back and they said, are you Jesus of Nazareth? And what did he say? I am. You know that the Jews, when they asked, you know, Jesus, what's going on? Earlier we talked about John chapter 7. It was in John chapter 7. Jesus said, before Abraham was, I am. Why is that a big deal? Because remember from the Old Testament, Exodus chapter 3, Moses says, who shall I tell them I've come to represent? You're the God with no name. And he says, tell them I am has sent you. A form of that becomes what we see as Jehovah or Yahweh through the rest of the Old Testament. But when Jesus said, before Abraham was, I am, he was saying the version of that name where they would know he was claiming to be the one who talked to Moses. When Jesus said that name, for a moment, everyone took a step back and hit the ground. God the Father gave his Son a moment of affirmation. Even Jesus, when we talk about affirming someone, giving them some encouragement, remember when Jesus was praying, there's really no one who can relate to him. God sent an angel to encourage him, yes? And now when his Son has got to be picked up on a trumped up charge where he's not guilty, even though it's part of his plan, God sent just a breath of divine power. So when Jesus says, it's me, I am the one, where they all step back and went down. Jesus needed encouragement and another thing from the Holy Spirit as well, for his human side. So if you ever wonder about, should I give someone some positive words or encouragement, that should come in your mind. It's good to always lift somebody up if you can, yes? Good to say something positive, yes, isn't it? Because the world is filled around with all kinds of negative comments, negative qualities, things you should have done better, things that could have been done differently. But the Father let Jesus have that moment where everyone went down. And I think that had some interplay. Why will Peter be bold and be brave? He just saw the people that came to arrest Jesus take a knee or perhaps go all the way flat. Then they get up and pursue. And remember, we talk about the disciples are guys. Tough, you know, living outside, eating whatever they could find, guys. And so Peter had been boasting that he would protect Jesus. Ah, don't let anybody... Remember, it was Peter who had told Jesus that he would not lose his life. Peter's the one who said, let me wash your feet. So Peter was bold and outspoken, courageous. That's a good skills to have. However, only Luke notes the precise result of the attack. So I'm going to be plain for just a moment because the Bible kind of gives us a little bit of things to guess on, to chew on, from some of the remarks, particularly remarks here from Luke. Some think that when Peter reached out and slashed at Malchus' right ear, that he did not quite cut it off completely. The terminology seems that perhaps he cut, there was blood, but it didn't come all the way off. It was left dangling, forgive me, dangled by a thread. So what a terrible and awkward scene. They've come to arrest Jesus. One of his own followers, one of the 12, had been the one who fingered him. His disciples are responding with a weapon. He did not even do a good job with it. And here's some other guy who's standing there bleeding. It's a mess. What's going on? And Jesus said, we're going to translate this phrase a little bit different. Permit even this. And touched his ear and healed him. This is perhaps an unusual way to say it, but let me put it into context. So Jesus is there. He's got his 11 with him. The 12th one is on the other side, has just kissed him, has backed off with the others. Peter has impulsively tried to defend his Lord. I mean, you've got to give Peter credit. His heart's in the right place. But he did a bad job. Because not very many times do you send an assassin to cut somebody's ear off. He had done a bad job. He didn't know what to do. And so Jesus is probably here. Peter is there. You know, this is kind of by where Todd is and his family. And the arresting Romans who are going to do the dirty work are starting to surround Jesus. And Jesus says, stop. Please let me do this. So Jesus walks out from among the Romans who have started to surround him, reaches out and touches Malchus's ear and heals him. In other words, he says, don't arrest me. Do you see what's just happened? That's not what I want them to do. Let me go heal him. He didn't say what he was going to do, but they must have thought Jesus was going to do something because Jesus had a reputation of being a miracle worker, of being a healer, of being a great teacher. So Jesus is telling his disciples to stop. Stop it now. And saying, let me heal this man. Our Gospels are going to continue that all the representatives that would have been part of the Sanhedrin, chief priests, captains, leaders of the temple, and elders, covers all the bases. All the aspects of Jewish leadership had representatives there. Said, if you come out as against a robber with swords and clubs. Notice he's putting on the spot, telling them how cowardly they were, where they could have, remember, arrested in front of the people, but they were afraid of their reputation and their jobs and what people thought of them. And so they wanted to arrest Jesus away from everyone else. And that's why Judas coming was just too great a facilitation, greater than they could have dreamed. They were treating him as if he was a mobster. I sometimes watch those TV, you know, true crime things. And if you're going to go arrest somebody who's on the run, you'll have a lot of people surrounding a building, knocking on. You might have a helicopter. And over 200 people came to arrest one guy who was unarmed in a garden with 11 other friends. Overkill. Jesus was anything but a rebel and a revolutionary. He'd been a peaceful prophet. He's sitting in the temple daily, talking, teaching people. His life was an open book. If there was something about him, they would have already known it. They would have done it. They were looking for a reason to pick him up. And he points that out. When I was with you daily in the temple, you didn't try to seize me. But this is, notice, your hour, the power of darkness. Jesus said to Peter, put the sword in the sheath, the cup which the Father has given me. Shall I not drink it? So the Roman cohort and the commander and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. Matthew, Mark, and John throw in enough details. It's worth looking at all these things together. Notice Jesus speaks about the powers of darkness. He's very plain as far as who's masterminding all of this. Jesus was then bound with ropes. Yet all of this is God's plan, God's permission, His wishes for us and our redemption. Notice this. Jesus' last free actions with unbound hands, because the rest of this night He's arrested, He's dragged around, He's mistreated, to say it gently, and then executed. His last free actions with unbound hands was to heal one of His attackers. The Son of Man is what? Come to seek and to save that which is lost. After this, He's bound and led to crucifixion. When I was growing up in Denver, Denver did not mind so much in the 70s if you got a parking ticket downtown. There were meters all over, and where I lived, West Denver, there's a diagonal street, Spear Boulevard. Hop on Spear Boulevard, head downtown, I'd be downtown in 10 minutes. And as a younger person, got a car, had a job, a little bit of money to spend, I like to go downtown. Big stores, restaurants, one of the first places I took Barbary, it was one of those restaurants down there in Larimer Square. Neat place to go. And they wanted you to shop down there. And believe it or not, not that many people were driving to downtown to go shopping for a lot of reasons. And so they had the meters up, and it was, you know, a quarter for half an hour. It was a long time. But if you didn't pay and you just wanted to park and take a chance, Denver had the parking police and the guys with the little, you know, the little chalk on a stick, marked your car. When you got two stripes on your tire, ticket. How much was a ticket? $5. By the way, if you drove downtown at 8 o'clock in the morning and didn't want to keep running out to the meter, that means you parked all day for how long? $5. You couldn't park in a lot for $5. So I was one of those people. I drive down, in the mercy of God, somehow I never got a parking ticket. But you just drive downtown, park, do your thing, and move about your business, and so what? Anyway, the point of that story is, in Minersville, Pennsylvania, the police received an envelope. The outside of the envelope was just addressed to the Minersville Police Department, and inside was a piece of paper and a $5 bill. The $5 bill was wrapped around a sheet that said, "I'm feeling guilty." So somebody had got a parking ticket, and to research this, the guy actually saved the parking ticket. And it was 44 years old. 44 years old. And the guy had carried it with him and not, you know, I have a hard time keeping the receipts, especially if I have to turn in something to Debbie to get remember. I have a hard time keeping the receipt for 3 days. Much less this guy had a parking ticket he must have carried in his wallet 44 years. And after 44 years, he finally felt guilty enough to put in the $5 and say, "I'm feeling guilty," so that he would feel better and it wouldn't bother him so much. They posted the story. I mean, you can say, "I can find it," and other people, yeah, they don't know who did it. The guy never came forward. For inflation, they said the $5 would have been $20, and no big deal. But why did he do it? Not because it was the right thing to do, but because he felt guilty. Imagine how people felt as time had gone by if you had been one of the 200 that had arrested Jesus. Even the centurion, a.k.a. the master sergeant in charge on the top of the hill, said, "Surely this must be the Son of God." You and I are supposed to have a conscience. You're supposed to feel things. You're supposed to reflect on the morality and the ethics of your actions. God counts on that. God gives us a conscience that until we ignore it so much and it becomes hardened, our conscience can be a good starting place for showing us what we should have done and should not have done. We're not going to blame the Jews for crucifying Jesus. We're not going to blame the Roman cohort. We're not going to blame Pontius Pilate or his wife for not influencing enough to let him go. Because each of us are guilty of the death of Christ. Amen. And it was the Father's plan. This was the Father's plan. Why did God cast him out of the garden when he did? Eating the tree of knowledge, good and evil, that was the one thing they weren't supposed to do because now they were aware of sin. But why did God cast them out of the garden in Genesis 3? Because he didn't want them to eat of the fruit of the tree that would cause them not to die. Why do angels only get one chance? Angels don't die. To be redeemed, you have to be able to die. The wages of sin is death. If you can't death, your sins can't be atoned for. Why did Jesus become a man and not an angel? Jesus became a man so that he could die for us. As in Adam all die, even so in Christ shall all be made alive, Romans chapter 5. Christ had to die for us. Why were humans allowed to die? Because without death, we can't be redeemed. God loved us enough to let us die, as we talked about with our young friends. Because without death, redemption is not possible. If Jesus could not die for us, he could not redeem us. Angels don't get redeemed, the ones who fell. They are in their future. It is certain. Christ died for us. He who knew no sin, that we could be the righteousness of God in him.